Good morning. Can you hear me okay? Okay. I have no disclosures to make, and you're probably all familiar with the recent statistics that show that the U.S. continues to have declining rates in terms of teen pregnancies, births, and abortions. And the good news is that it's across teens of all ages, across racial and ethnic groups, and across all states. But it's a little bit premature to celebrate because the U.S. continues to have the highest rates compared to all other industrialized countries. It's also a little bit premature to celebrate because teen mothers have very, very high rates of psychological distress. Now, it's not true of all teen moms, but for many reasons, teen moms are predisposed to psychological distress. And it's very prevalent for most teen moms, serious and neglected. And in this paper, I'm going to refer to psychological distress as the umbrella term, but it includes symptoms of depression, symptoms of related to trauma, anxiety, substance abuse. But for the paper today, I'm going to use the term psychological distress to incorporate all that. What we know mostly about depression in teen moms, all the comorbidities that are common with depression have not been studied very much for teen moms. What we do know is that the rates for teen moms' depression is probably 2 to 3 times that of older mothers. We also know that depressive symptoms for teen moms tend to persist and remain very high in midlife, especially among those teen moms who have had a lot of childhood adversities. So what I'm going to do in the beginning is talk about what we do know about teen mothers' psychological distress, what teen moms are at greatest risk, what's its impact on mothers and children, what are the barriers to mental health treatment for teen moms, and among the few studies that we have in terms of treatment, what is effective for teen moms. And then after presenting that, I'll suggest some recommendations for how we address teen mothers' psychological distress. So among teen mothers in general, who's at greatest risk? Well, we know that children who grow up in highly stressed families and toxic environments are particularly prone to teen pregnancy, but they're also predisposed to psychological distress. Teens who are disconnected from school, teens who lack educational and employment opportunities and options. And the girls who grow up in these situations tend to be disadvantaged and discouraged girls. They also tend to have many adverse childhood experiences. How many of you are familiar with the ACEs study? Yeah, I'm assuming most of you would be. And so I'm going to refer a little bit to that study. We know that study was conducted beginning back in the 1996 by Felitti in conjunction with CDC, and they defined ACEs as growing up in families affected by mental illness, substance abuse, violence, or criminal activity. And what many, many reports now document is that there's a graded relationship. The more ACEs you have as a child, the worse you do across all kinds of outcomes, from childhood to midlife, premature mortality, chronic illnesses, mental health conditions, increased risk of STIs, poor relationships, on and on and on. There's one very important study that looked specifically at teen moms among the ACEs researchers, and they found that teen moms with high number of ACEs had poor outcomes at midlife. But those who didn't have large number of ACEs did as well as older mothers. So the ACEs is really, really important in helping us to consider the psychological distress that many teen mothers experience that originate well before they become pregnant. Those teens who have many ACEs are predisposed to risk for psychological distress as children. If they become a teen mother, then all those childhood traumas are then compounded by all the demands of parenting on the economic margins, limited social support, for some, intimate partner violence, and we also know that teen mothers are stigmatized and face a lot of discrimination, either for being poor, single, and for many being African American or Latina or immigrant or being an immigrant. So they face lots of discrimination, which contributes to the psychological distress that may have originated during childhood. So I'm sure this audience knows a lot about the impact of psychological distress on mothers. We know that, particularly related to depression, though, that depression compromises obstetric outcomes, maternal functioning, and mothers' long-term health. For teen mothers with high rates of psychological distress, it increases the risk of a subsequent teen birth, contributes to substance use and aggression, impaired or harsh parenting. The other really important finding is that high rates of depression undermine teen mothers' engagement in services. So the services that people are trying to give aren't necessarily reaching the most vulnerable group of teens because attrition is very, very high if they have high rates of psychological distress, and they tend not to come in for as many sessions. And then, of course, psychological distress for teen mothers increases chronic health issues and mental conditions for those with high ACEs. And, of course, you also know how maternal distress contributes to children's vulnerability over time. Infants have attachment problems. Children are at risk for behavioral problems and poor health. Children aren't ready for school. And a few studies now show that when teen mothers' psychological distress isn't treated, that their adolescent and young adult offspring have more depressive symptoms than the children of teen mothers who have not had, long course of psychological distress. But in spite of these very, very high rates of psychological distress among some teen mothers rarely get traditional mental health treatment for all the reasons you know. So many barriers. The ones I want to draw attention to here is for those teen mothers who have grown up in difficult families, toxic neighborhoods, psychological distress is just part of their world. So it doesn't occur to them. It's just normal. So it's normalized. The distress is normalized. So they wouldn't consider seeking help and treatment. But the other big issue is all the stigma related to being a teen mom and the stigma of being labeled with a mental health condition. They fear losing custody of their children. So for all these reasons, they rarely seek help. And there is a couple studies to show that poor women, ethnically diverse poor women, not necessarily teen moms, but they prefer support groups for depression and anxiety as an alternative to treatment. And at least some studies are showing that mothers in general avoid using any kind of psychotropic medications. And in fact, psychotropic meds for low to moderate levels of depression are marginally effective anyway. And they certainly don't provide the social support that mothers prefer. So now I just want to turn briefly to our interventions that have been given to teen moms in terms of their effectiveness. Most of them focus on postpartum depression. And they're very heterogeneous in terms of their approach. There's been two very small group-based therapy programs located in a teen mother's school, and those did quite well in reducing teen mother's symptoms, depression symptoms. There's also been a couple studies that have offered home-based psychotherapy for postpartum depression, with included teen moms, but included older mothers as well, low-income mothers, and they've shown promise in reducing depression symptoms with low-income moms. There's an interesting study for teen moms who received an infant massage intervention, and it had a good control group, and symptoms reduced for those teen moms. So it didn't specifically address depression, but they measured depression symptoms, and it was reduced for those. And then there's just one or two comprehensive interventions that have shown a reduction in symptoms of depression related to controls. Now, the other avenue for addressing teen mothers' psychological distress is interventions that are more family-focused, either working with the grandparents and the teen moms or the teen mothers and the fathers of their children. And both these groups of interventions have also shown some effectiveness in reducing teen mothers' psychological distress. It makes a lot of sense. If you include grandmothers and sort of reduce some of the conflicts that can emerge and clarify generational boundaries, that can improve not only the teen mother's relationship to her child, but also depressive symptoms. And the same thing with teen father, young dads. So just to sum up, psychological distress is prevalent. It often originates in childhood for teen moms, and it tends to persist. Barriers to traditional treatment are ubiquitous, and intervention studies are rare, and they tend to focus on postpartum depression. Many of them have lots of problems with attrition, but interventions have much less attrition when the treatment is provided at services that are already well accepted by teen moms, and I'm going to come back to that. So based on all this, what we're recommending is that we really need to integrate mental health care into services that teen parents are already using. But doing that requires that we train all frontline staff in trauma-informed care, and that we screen for ACEs and psychological distress. I don't know how many of you are familiar with trauma-informed care, but these are some of the basic premises of it. And we're suggesting that all staff learn this, learn how to do this, be able to recognize trauma symptoms, and coordinate with other services, develop collaborative relationships and strengths-based relationships with teen moms. It's also very important in these programs to train staff to manage their own professional and personal stress so they don't have secondary trauma related to hearing about all of the kinds of terrible circumstances that teen mothers have to face. So the advantages of integrating trauma-informed care into all services that teen mothers already receive is that these programs are already accessible and trusted, for the most part, by teen mothers and their families. The other real advantage to them is that they tend, like schools, schools are already serving pregnant teens, I mean, except for those who drop out, that's a serious issue, and they continue to follow them long term. So community health services, schools, community-based services are going to tend to have much longer involvement with teen mothers than traditional mental health care. These programs are used to coordinating with other community services. They may already provide parent support groups, and they may be in a better position to reach out to grandmothers and to fathers. So, unfortunately, we researchers and clinicians have paid a lot of attention to many of the outcomes related to teen mothering, but not to mental health outcomes. We need to change that, and we need to provide services that are acceptable and accessible for teen moms. And it's much more likely for that to happen if they're integrated into services that teen moms are already using. But we must also advocate for upstream policies that mitigate childhood traumas and the social inequities that contribute to psychological distress for teen and older mothers, but that will also reduce our high rates of teen parenting to begin with. So, that's it. We have time for questions. Yes. Good question, but I don't know. I don't remember.
Interesting, because knowing that this is helpful. Yeah. As like a social group, and yeah. not necessarily doing therapy. You know, I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, and you bring up an important point that, as some of the research shows, mothers are much, they want to get the social support from other mothers. It validates what they already know and sharing with other teen moms. So, yeah, certainly group approaches are probably one of the best ways to go. Providing a psychodrama intervention, group-based psychodrama intervention with teen moms now, and the comparison group is a group of teen moms in a regular support group. And, I mean, it just that what we're finding from that study validates the importance of integrating it with the program, because what we've learned from the comparison group is they are so sad when they age out of the program because they get so much support. And, yeah, maybe they're not. If you could just integrate some of the mental health, train those people in trauma-informed care, there would be even that much more benefit to what they're already receiving from this support group. Any other questions? Yes.
Have you heard of Baby Cafe, where mothers can drop in and get help with breastfeeding and just sort of hang out and talk to each other?
Oh, is that specifically for teen moms or teen moms? Oh, by WIC. Great. Yeah, and integrating mental health care into that. Wouldn't that be fabulous? That'd be really reaching some of those vulnerable moms who are not going to get treatment otherwise.
I guess, you know, knowing that there's a stigma to be labeled as mental health issue, haven't thought about bringing any resiliency training or coping skills.
Right. I mean, and I think some of the, I don't know how some of the interventions label it. I mean, certainly the infant massage, they're not labeling it as anything, right? They're just using tools to find out what their depressive symptoms are. So, yeah, it's a, labeling is a really, really crucial issue. And I think some of these programs, you know, don't use the symptom, don't use depression or the traditional.
I see a place for discharge, you know, to have their family issues some service as an automatic instruction for discharge.
Right. Yes. Thank you. Anything else? Okay. Thank you.